You know what one of God's greatest attributes is? His patience. Here's Skip Heitzig.
Something to note about God, and you see it in the ministry of two notable prophets, and that is God is a pursuing God. He's a merciful God. He loves, before he judges, to reach out. He loves to give people as many chances as is possible before he ultimately judges them.
Make the connection.
Have you ever noticed how people slow down when they see a car wreck, a train wreck, or any kind of wreck for that matter? It's commonly referred to as rubbernecking, as people slow down to turn and stretch their heads in an attempt to get a better view. It's sort of morbid, to be sure, but our curiosity often gets the better of us when we see things that go bad. Well, today in The Connection, Skip Heitzig spends some time with us rubbernecking as we fly over a period of time in Israel's history where things seem to go from bad to worse. But before we get started, we wanted to tell you about Skip's new book, God Print. Here's more.
When Neil Armstrong stepped onto the moon for the first time, he left an impression that remains there to this day, his footprint in the lunar sand. Most of our footprints don't last, but that doesn't have to be the case. We can walk in such a way that our influence stands the test of time and will not be quickly eroded by the waves of forgetfulness. Abraham was a man who walked in a way that made a difference. These many millennia later, the path of Abraham brings light and lessons for us today. Join Skip Heitzig as he explores the life of Abraham and reveals how we can leave a lasting mark for the kingdom of God in the new book, God Print. Plus, when you order Godprint, we'll also send you The Royal Road of Love, a CD and booklet set that teaches the real meaning of love and comes with two original songs written by Skip Heitzig. Discover how the footprints of God in our life can help us leave a lasting impression on the people we encounter. Order the new book from Skip Heitzig, Godprint, along with The Royal Road of Love for just $25 when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org.
So Godprint is available now, along with all the other resources and teachings at connectionradio.org or by calling us at 1-800-922-1888. You know, in the book of 2 Kings, we see plenty of things go wrong as the nation of Israel train wrecks. But there's also some good to be found as well. So join us as we explore this fascinating period in Israel's history.
And make the connection.
As Skip Heitzig begins today's study in 2 Kings, he shares a few insights from one of TV's most popular programs.
Well, I noticed by reading USA Today that last night American Idol started. Well, I've always been intrigued by that title, by the way. It's sort of a very honest title, an honest admission, American Idolatry. But as it was the opening program last night, and the opening program is the one where they highlight all the rejects, and yet it is like one of their most highly rated programs. It's interesting. The article read, and here's the title, Idol Starts Out Bad, and Fans Love It. And here's a sentence from it, a couple of them. TV shows usually don't boast about how bad they can be, but that's the big selling point for American Idol's hugely popular season opening auditions. And as you know, if you've seen the program, they mix the very bad and the very good. They show the ones who've been accepted and are going to make it to the next level and the ones who are really bad, but they, for some reason, think they're good and they get in and it's very entertaining. Very good, very bad. This period of history in the book of 2 Kings, in Israel's history, is similar to that. You have a mix of the very good and the very bad. You've got great kings, Not many, but some. And you've got some very bad kings. You've got a lot of those. So it's almost like we have parallel tracks of degeneration and regeneration, of unrighteousness and righteousness. The book, A Tale of Two Cities, begins, "It was the best of times and it was the worst of times." Two parallel tracks. This is a tale of two kingdoms, not two cities, but two countries. And if you remember from last study, 1 Kings, the big event in 1 Kings is the division of the kingdom. It's not a united monarchy with one king reigning over the country. It is split from north to south. 10 tribes in the north, that's the nation of Israel. And then the nation of Judah, the two tribes in the south with Jerusalem as the capital. The big event in 1 Kings is the division of the kingdom. The big event in 2 Kings is the collapse of the kingdom, or the captivity, you might say. There's a couple of different superpowers, and there will be the taking over of these two kingdoms in the north and in the south. So I'm going to give you a division of the book very simply into two slices. Because basically what you have here, and if you've read some of the chapters, you know, there's a lot of lists of names of kings and a couple of prophets. We'll meet them tonight. But you have a list of kings and how long they reigned and something notable about them. And you'll notice that it'll tell you about who reigns in the north and then who reigns in the south and if they intersect or interact at all. And it just sort of follows that through. But there is a distinct division in 2 Kings. Chapters 1 through 17 is the first division. Chapter 18 through 25 is the second division. That first section, you could call it the struggling kingdoms, plural. The struggling kingdoms, the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. They're struggling. They're going down and sometimes going up because a prophet will speak to them and there'll be a mild period of repentance and they go back down. They're struggling and sometimes fighting each other. And then you have, in chapter 18 through 25, the surviving kingdom, singular. So the struggling kingdoms and the surviving kingdom, that's Judah. I say it survived because the kingdom of Israel will go into captivity. The kingdom of Judah will survive for a period of about 150 years, but the book ends where it finally collapses as well. So the struggling kingdoms and the surviving kingdom. Something to note about God, and you see it in the ministry of two notable prophets, and that is God is a pursuing God. He's a merciful God. He loves, before he judges, to reach out. He loves to give people as many chances as is possible before he ultimately judges them. And it's a theme. It just doesn't happen here, though it's repeated here. You see it repeated as a theme throughout the scriptures. God pronounces a judgment, gives a warning, but before he ultimately judges, it's as if he reaches his hand out and says, "Now, let's consider this. You don't have to go in that direction. It can be changed. You could turn around." And that's a theme we see even in the New Testament. One of the most notable examples of that is with a fellow by the name of Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. The one who had prearranged the arrest of Christ even before the Last Supper. That's why I find it interesting that at the Last Supper, Judas was sitting to Jesus' left. And if anybody knows ancient Middle East custom, the honored guest was at the right hand and at the left hand of the master. And you only get there by invitation. So before the supper, I'm sure Jesus walked up to Judas and says, "Judas, I want you sitting right next to me, buddy, right to my left hand." That's why Jesus said, "The one that I give the sop to," and it's typical that Passover to take a piece of the bread and dip it in that bitter herb sauce and pass it to the left, gave it to Judas. It was as if he was reaching out. "I know what you're doing. I know what you're about. You don't have to go this direction." And then as he got up, Jesus finally said to him, "Whatever you do, do it quickly." Well, something to note is that in spite of these kingdoms struggling and the ones surviving, in spite of these kings going from bad to worse, there are two prophets, and their names are similar, Elijah and Elisha. And it's as if God sends them in the midst of a faltering kingdom to defibrillate the heart. That's the only term I can really think of. They're like failing. They're having heart failure. And these prophets come in trying to defib the heart and revive the patient. But it's too late. So you've got some wicked kings, but you've got some great messengers that come, and we'll notice them, especially in the first eight chapters. Well, let's begin in chapter one, and we'll be highlighting a few chapters and verses as we go. This is the struggling kingdoms of Israel in the north and Judah in the south. Now, as we begin in chapter one, we're beginning with the end of Elijah's ministry and the beginning of Elisha's ministry. How many people get those two prophets confused? Honest show of hands. Yeah, most of us do. The rest of you aren't telling the truth. That's okay. We all do because their names sound so similar. And that's because that's what they sound like in English. Elijah and Elisha. In Hebrew, it would be very easy to tell the difference. The first prophet is pronounced Eliyahu. Eliyahu. The second one, Elisha. So there's a big difference between that pronunciation, but we're speaking English, so Elijah and Elisha, they sound very, very similar to each other, but they're very different. And we're going to read about that succession tonight. Go down to verse 8 of chapter 1 as we see a description of Elijah the prophet. By the way, the chapter opens up with Ahaziah. Now, you're going to have a lot of names tonight. I don't care if you remember them, but you'll remember the two kingdoms. Ahaziah is the king in the north. Jehoram is the king in the south, as the book opens. And Elisha and Elisha will interact with him. Verse 8, chapter 1, describes Elijah. Notice he's called a hairy man, wearing a leather belt around his waist. Sounds like Bigfoot. And he said, it is Elijah the Tishbite. Now go to chapter 2, verse 1. It came to pass when the Lord was about to take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. Verse 9 of chapter 2. And so it was when they had crossed over that Elijah said to Elisha, ask, what may I do for you before I am taken away from you? Elisha said, please, let a double portion of your spirit be upon me. What does that mean, a double portion? Simply this. I want to be your successor. I want that same Spirit of God that is operating so powerfully in your life that allows you to not operate in your own strength, but see God's continual power. I want that. I want to continue where you leave off. I want to pick up where you leave off. The idea of a double portion comes from the laws of inheritance. You may remember way back in the Torah, in the first five books of Moses, that the firstborn son got a double portion of dad's inheritance. That was his right as he was going to become the successor in that family as leader. So that's the idea of it. Not, I want twice as much as you have. That's not the idea. The idea is, I want to succeed where you leave off. So verse 10, he said, you've asked a hard thing. That's an interesting thing to say. Hey, I want to operate by the same spirit and power that you do. I want the double portion. I want that law of inheritance. Well, you've asked a hard thing. Why would he say that? Because, frankly, it's hard to be a prophet. You read about their stories. You read about their lives. Being a spokesperson for the Lord to a nation, to a group of people, is difficult. And I would even say this sentence to anyone who says, I want to be in the ministry. I want to be a pastor. I would say, what you ask is a hard thing. It's not easy to do that. But notice what he says after that. Nevertheless, if you see me when I am taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if not, it shall not be so. Then it happened, as they continued on and talked, that suddenly a chariot of fire appeared with horses of fire and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. It's wild, I'll admit it. It's better than American Idol. It's wild. He's taken up into heaven in a whirlwind. Elijah does not die. He's taken up into heaven. This makes him an exception to the rule where it says it is appointed unto every man once to die. And after this, the judgment. This guy doesn't die. Now, I believe that he ultimately will die. Now just follow me for a second. This is the time to really pay attention. See, it's my personal belief that just like the long-standing Jewish tradition that Elijah will come, that Elijah will come. As it says in the last chapter of the Old Testament, chapter 4 of Malachi, that God will send Elijah the prophet before the great and dreadful day of the Lord. That's that final epic period of judgment in the tribulation period. And he will turn the hearts of the children to the fathers and the fathers to the children. I believe that it's very possible that we see in the book of Revelation, Elijah mentioned. Now, I'm going to read this section to you really briefly. It's Revelation chapter 11. It concerns the two witnesses that come in the tribulation period. And listen to their description. Revelation 11, if anyone wants to harm them, fire proceeds from their mouth and devours their enemies. You've heard of bad breath? This is deadly breath. And if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this manner. They have power to shut heaven so that no rain falls in the days of their prophecy, which incidentally is 3.5 years. And they have power over waters to turn them to blood and to strike the earth with all plagues as often as they desire. And the text goes down in Revelation and says, when they had finished their testimony, the beast that rises up out of the bottomless pit will make war against them, overcome them, and kill them. The question is always, well, who are these two strange witnesses? It's my belief, it's very possible, that it's none other than the prophet Elijah and Moses, the lawgiver, who return as a testimony, would be the greatest testimony to the Jewish nation, Moses, the great lawgiver, and then the greatest of all prophets to the Jewish nation is Elijah. And be those final bright light before the final day of judgment at Armageddon occurs. Now, I make that statement based on a few clues. Number one is the past. If you think back in your Old Testament to some of the things that Moses and Elijah did, it's very similar, isn't it? For instance, Elijah brings fire down from heaven, 1 Kings chapter 18, to consume the sacrifices. We mentioned that last week. Also, in 2 Kings chapter 1, when the king demands that Elijah be brought before him, he sends 50 men to go get Elijah. And they look up to him. He's sitting up on a hill and they say, you, man of God, come down here. The king wants to see you. And Elijah says, well, if I am a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and wipe you guys out. Fire falls from heaven, they all die. 50 of them, 51 of them. Another group is dispatched. Same thing happens. A third group comes, and the leader of the third group finally says, please spare our lives. Please, please come down and talk to the king. And so he does. But fire falls down from heaven. And then also, remember back in the Old Testament, Moses turned the Nile River into blood and brought all sorts of plagues, a similar description as we see in Revelation 11. So first clue is the past. Second is that prophecy that I mentioned in Malachi chapter 4, Elijah will come. And even Jesus, who said John the Baptist is a partial fulfillment, turned to his disciples and said, you know what? Elijah will, future tense, still come. And even to this day, at Passover, the Jews leave the door open and a chair at the Passover table for Elijah, just in case he would happen to show up at their Passover. A third clue is precedence, New Testament precedence. For them to come again is already established in two of the Gospels. When Jesus was on the Mount of Transfiguration, two persons were transfigured with him, and they were Moses and Elijah. That's found in Matthew 17 and Mark chapter 19. Moses and Elijah appear with Christ, and they're speaking about the kingdom. And then finally, their passing is a clue. Their passing, the way they died. As I said, Elijah didn't die. He was taken up into heaven, as we read in a whirlwind. Moses died, and the Bible says in Deuteronomy, God buried him, and nobody knows where his body was. Now, we get to the New Testament. We read a very strange passage in the book of Jude, verse 9, that says, Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil, when he disputed about the body of Moses. It's an odd scripture. We have insight into the fact that you have an angel of God and Satan fighting over a dead corpse. You know, I would look at that and go, what's the point of this argument? Unless, of course, God wanted to use the body of Moses for some future purpose, i.e. resurrection, bringing him back as a testimony with Elijah in the tribulation period to speak to the people of Israel, and 144,000 of them will be saved. Interesting thought, is it not? Well, Elisha, the second dude, the guy that asked for the double portion, not only did he do lots of miracles that are recorded here, we'll only touch on a couple, but he also confronts the kings of Israel and Judah. And in chapter 3, he confronts King Jehoram down in Judah. But I'm taking you to chapter 4 now. In chapter 4, we have a couple little highlighted stories, a couple little cameos of the prophet Elijah, Elisha. I better really say that correctly tonight. Elisha, a couple of little stories about some of the miracles he worked. One is with a poor widow, and the other is with a Shunammite woman. Now, I'll explain those terms in a minute. But here's the deal. The chapter opens up with a widow. Her husband died. The creditors want money. She's left destitute. Finally, the creditors come and threaten to take her sons and sell them into slavery.
You know, we're generally fascinated by the bad, hence the slowdown in traffic as people try to get a better look at a wreck. But we almost always prefer the good for our own lives. Well, as we'll continue to learn from both the good and bad in Israel's history, hopefully we'll discover ways to minimize the bad and increase the good as we walk closer with God. Now, that's going to conclude our time for today. But before we go, here's how you can help increase the good in lives of people all over the world by helping us share the good news of the gospel.
Paris, the city of lights, the city of love, but a city that needs to hear about real love, the agape love of God. Paris may have a reputation of being a city for its many streets, canals, and bridges, and romantic ambiance, but only the love of Christ will satisfy our desire for true love. Help us share this good news in the streets of Paris and around the world as a member of the Global Connectors. Join today for just $25 a month. And when you do, not only will you help us share the truth about love with people all over the world, you'll also receive a free resource each month. This month, you'll receive a teaching from Michael Dente from Calvary Chapel, Paris.
In a city so known, therefore, for its immorality, its intellectualism, and its riches, it would appear that Paul only saw one solution to cure their spiritual ills, and that was to know Christ, to know Jesus Christ, and to know Him crucified.
When people think romance, they often think of Paris. But in order to truly experience love, what we need is not a trip to a city of romance, but a trip to the cross. Help us share the good news of God's love in Paris and around the world as a member of the Global Connectors. Call today, 1-800-922-1888, or visit connectionradio.org.
And you can also pick up a copy of today's teaching when you contact us. So give us a call at 1-800-922-1888. We'll send you a copy on CD for just $6, including shipping. Or you can order from our website at connectionradio.org. Also, keep in mind that if you contact us for the first time today, we'll also send you a free bonus teaching from Skip called Destination Ruth. So call us and let us know it's your first time to do so when you call 1-800-922-1888 or write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection.
We'll continue through the book of 2 Kings next time, so join us as we fly over more of the Bible from 30,000 feet here in The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.